Hey you, yeah you, come join our Discord. The Mixing Music Discord server is filled with tons of awesome information and people. People that can help you out and information that can help you grow your business and to help you improve your mixes. So come join us and find the invitation link at mixingmusicpodcast.com.
Hey, how's it going, guys? Welcome to the Mixing Music Podcast. I'm your host, Lou, and unfortunately not with me is our resident cool guy, DK. Now, unfortunately, Daddy D is a little under the weather today, but I kind of wanted to actually just do a little solo one as he's done in the past when I'm not available. And I wanted to bring you guys back to something that I always think is really important, but it doesn't get talked about all that much because it's just not sexy. And you know, as much as we all love a good sexy topic, sometimes it's about going back to basics. And what I really mean by this is understanding what I like to think are kind of like three really important tools when people ask me, hey, I'm trying to improve my recording, whether it be in studio, at the house, or even if you're doing some live audio, this is still just as important for you. So what are those three things? It comes down to your gain staging, so your input gain. Actually setting up like very, very basic starting processes like high pass filters, low pass filters, your phase, checking that. And also, you know, your time alignment, because that also goes back into phase. And lastly, your fader, which why is your fader so important? We'll get into that. But let me just get into the guts of it because I know it's not going to be as sexy. I'll try to make it as sexy as I can. And I'll try to, you know, just give you my honest view on it because I like talking about these things. But they're honestly probably the main reason that some people just aren't getting a good result out the gate. So let's start off with the idea of like, why is it so important? Realistically, like when we're talking about basics, some people might think like you have to have a good microphone, you have to have good acoustics, you have to have good this and that. The reality is sometimes that's just not financially available for everybody, and that's totally okay. I get it. When I started recording myself, I was in my parents' garage with broken windows, and we had a refrigerator right next to me that just made so much noise. I literally had like just trash everywhere. It's everybody's parents' messy garage, if that makes sense. And I just made the best I could with it. And these basics is what actually gave me a really good foundation and seemingly had a lot of clients actually booking me out of a cold garage with no ventilation, no insulation or anything like that. When it was cold, it was cold. When it was hot, you were sweating. But no matter the condition, like we really managed to get some pretty cool recordings out of there. So let's start off with basics number one, which is gain staging. Now, if you see me kind of looking off to the side or anything, just know I actually have a notebook with me where I actually wrote a few pages worth of notes of things that I wanted to make sure I hit. Because if you listen to this podcast before, you know that me and DK can get a bit scatterbrained. We can go off on tangents pretty easily, which is exactly what I'm doing right now. I'm very self-aware of this right now, but I'm just trying to explain, like, don't mind the distractions. It's literally my notebook. But, you know, what is gain staging? Like, what are we actually talking about when it comes to that? And what are some of the points of it that will help communicate why it's so important? Well, gain staging in a very layman's way of saying it is kind of the sweet spot between your input converter and the signal that's feeding it. Now by input converter, I mean that this is what's actually turning the analog voltage into digital audio. So this could be the mic input of your Apollo, which has a preamp built into it, which you are gaining up from there. And then that's feeding the input converter on your Apollo. Now, the reason that part of this is actually kind of considered like finding the sweet spot is because you only have so much headroom going into your converter. So at 24-bit, I believe it's 96 decibels. I could be wrong on that. I'll double check that. Future Lou here, quick correction. 24-bit has 144 decibels of headroom, while 16-bit actually has 96. And now with 32-bit, we actually have about 1,500 plus decibels, I think I saw, but it's getting pretty up there. How much do we really need to gain it up. You know, we want to actually get as loud as we can, because early on when we were recording on tape or ADAT or anything like that, just the slightly inferior electronics, there was more noise than there is now. In a modern day, we don't actually have as much noise on our input converters or anything of that nature, or however we're capturing in our medium. We have a much cleaner signal now and better overall converters. So gain staging, though, it still very much matters. It's more about maintaining actual bit depth and resolution. So, for instance, if you're gaining it up enough to be audible, but you still have like 30 decibels worth of headroom, then though the noise nowadays may be very minuscule. And this noise that I'm talking about, I'm not talking about like room noise. I'm talking about noise from your electronics. So like your audio interface could be generating noise. It could be, you know, a ground loop that maybe just be somewhere in there, but you know, some inherent noise that's kind of fixed in the audio because of the capture medium. That could be your audio interface, tape machine. Once again, it could be anything, but, maximizing the amount of gain you have before distortion is kind of the ideal route. So maximizing signal to noise ratio. So if you have a fixed noise ratio of, let's say, minus 60 decibels, and you can get the mic up to minus 18 and you got a belter on your hands, you know, having that extra 18 decibels of headroom before clipping at zero, and we're talking DBFS, we're talking digital, then, you know, that's great. You know, having that minus 18. And not only that, but a lot of plugins are actually kind of designed around a minus 18, minus 16 input signal, because they're kind of emulating analog pieces. And depending on the VU, most DBVUs were set to minus 18 being their zero, if you want to compare DBFS to DBVU. So a lot of people back in the day were actually, you know, just gain staging to zero VU, which was minus 18 DBFS. And it seemed to work out better. Now, the sweet spot doesn't mean just get it as loud as you can. If you clip here and there is okay. Not really, because back in the day, like I said, if you were gain staging to DBVU zero on an analog console, if it started to clip or distort or something, it actually did it in harmonic ways, and each console had its own character. So it was actually kind of cool to distort on purpose on a console. But in the digital world, let's say you're clipping into Pro Tools or Logic or whatever you're using, Cubase, yeah, that's not as pretty. You're just straight up squaring off the wave in a way that's not actually harmonically enhancing it the way analog would. Now, I'm not saying that analog is better. I'm just saying that the fact of the matter is you're still clipping the signal. And that's not necessarily the idea when gain staging what quote unquote would be properly. So in practice, what I like to do is I do like to come in at minus 18 DBFS, whether it be on my live audio console or if I'm doing that in a recording session. Main reason is that, let's say you're a template user and you like to kind of just throw faders at the beginning of a session when you work with a client. Like back in the day, I was working with different artists for years that I've known them for years. And because of that, I kind of knew where they landed and how they liked their settings. So if I always knew where to gain myself up at, I knew kind of the rest of the session and the template file would actually kind of flow with things. But if you're starting from zero, and let's say you're recording a full band, if you can properly gain stage the whole way through, you're also feeding all of this into your master bus, which we'll talk about later with faders. But proper gain staging could be the difference between clipping your master bus and clipping your inputs all the same, you know? Because if you're having to turn the gain down because you're distorting the master bus already, then though you had good signal, you know, you can't really do that across the board. So you kind of want to have a situation where all your faders are at zero when you're setting your gains. So let's talk about what the overall goal in this is. Just very simply, it's about maximizing every bit you have available to you. So if you're doing a snare and the drummer's wailing away at it and you're coming at minus 18 and it still hasn't clipped, that's great. If you have a little more room to give your drums while you're tracking them and everything, that's great. But ideally, you want to get it loud enough to where you're not going to clip, and you don't want it so quiet that you're not really using the headroom available to you. Because, yeah, you could probably turn up the fader later, but that's not a replacement for proper gain staging. Okay, so now let's move on to the next small group of things, which are not small by any means. We're going to be talking about phase, time alignment, high pass and low pass filters, and kind of, you know, why they kind of matter depending on what you're doing. You know, once again, these are things that you can take to the studio or live with you. But phase is such an important detail, and it's something that's usually overlooked, especially at a beginning stage. And it may not be overlooked because we don't think it's important. It might just be overlooked because we just don't fully know about its level of importance that early on in our career. So if you're just starting out, this is extremely important. If you know what you're doing, then I'm sure you agree with me 100% when I say that if you're going to be doing something that has a bunch of mics on a common source, or you're doing a full band or anything, phase alignment is really important. Now, let's talk about the benefit of properly in-phase microphones. Let's say we're working on drums. Now, drums, you've got kick, snare, you've got, let's say, two toms on a simple kit, and you've got hi-hat, ride, and some cymbals. Now, on a simple setup, let's say studio or live, because I actually kind of use similar setups, but let's just talk about like a studio situation. I might have kick in, kick out, snare top and bottom. That's four mics already. We've got hi-hat, and then we've got rack tom one, floor tom. We've got possibly a hi-hat and a ride mic. So we're nine mics in, and then we've got overheads. So we're 11 mics in, and what I like to call a gooch mic, that's 12 mics in. And I know a lot of people know it as gooch mic, but some people call it a knee mic, a geek mic, whatever you want to call it, it's a gooch mic. And then you got room mics. You can do mono, stereo, you can do mid-side. It really doesn't matter. So you're probably using anywhere between like 12 to 16 inputs. But all of them are placed at different positions for focusing on different sources or on overall. But because of that, all the audio is arriving to those mics at different time. And so we're going to start with the basic part of it, and then we're going to actually move on to kind of the timing of it, which also deals with phase. Before we get into EQing or compressing anything to actually sound more impactful, if you really want punch out of things, you got to get it in phase. A good example of this is when you're doing a snare top and a snare bottom. The reason being is that at the top and bottom, you have two different impact points. So it's actually kind of inverted from each other. So you want them to move in motion with each other. So you got to flip the phase on bottom. You can literally picture it. If the arrows are pointing one down and one up and they're equal energy, they're going to cancel each other out. It's just going to be a flat line. But if the arrows can point in the same direction, I'm trying to give this visual as simple as I can for anybody that's not watching the video. But if you can get the arrows to point in the same direction, you're in a good place. Now imagine a speaker moving. If it's plus one on the bass note and minus one on the bass note, that cone's not going to move, is it? So that's kind of where phase cancellation is kind of ruining your dynamics. If you want punchy snares, punchy kicks, you know, want toms that really shake the speaker, you got to get it in phase. Typically, your timing will affect phase more than you would think. And that's why this part's kind of important. So when it comes to, let's say, kick in and kick out, you have one that's actually getting the source information like from within the kick, one of them from out. And depending on how far back it is, you might actually want to time align those two. And you'd actually find that your kick actually gets a little bit punchier, because what ends up happening is something called comb filtering. And this is happening throughout the entire drum set. And we'll use the overheads as an example point for this one. But with comb filtering, there's a bit of a delay in time. So even though they could potentially be the same audio source, let's say that on the overheads, we just smack the snare, and the overheads are placed at different distances. One is at 3 feet, one is at 2 feet. Well, one of them is arriving, you know, essentially two-thirds of the way faster. The other one's just full 3 feet away. But it's the same snare. But one of them is arriving almost like a millisecond later, if you want to put it down to numbers. And that 1 millisecond can actually be the difference between a really focused snare and something feeling like, why is the snare feel like it's on the left side? Why does it feel like it's on the right side? If you essentially tried to get them, the mics to be placed like as if the snare was in the middle, you should be able to hear it in the middle. But now there's a skewing of imaging, and now there's some comb filtering going on, which is resulting in the snare not sounding as punchy or as full as the snare does when you're in the room. When you actually record multi-mic'd sources, whether that be two mics on a guitar or drums, you want to make sure that you can a simple trick is to get a tape measure and just say, okay, the first overhead is 3 feet away, so I need to make sure that the next overhead is also 3 feet away. And then you kind of want to space them like an equal triangle if you can. There's a bunch of different things that you can do. There's like the 3-to-1 rule, depending on what you're doing. A lot of people use that for like guitar cabs and all that. But to be honest, rules are meant to be broken after a certain point. Do what you feel is right. Sometimes comb filtering sounds cool.
You can't rely on blind faith to get the pregnancy support you deserve. Ritual's Essential Prenatal Multivitamin is the only leading prenatal backed by its own human clinical trial. Essential Prenatal is proven to deliver key nutrients, including folate, biotin, and vitamin D during pregnancy. Get 25% off when you visit ritual.com/clinical. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Offer valid on standard browsers, U.S. only.
When I heard about Date My Age, I thought, really? But there I was in my empty, quiet house, my laptop on the kitchen counter, and I typed in my name. Looking for a man between the ages of 40 to 60? Sure, why not?
Date My Age is different. With verified profiles, you can feel safe and secure to explore meaningful connections with interesting and mature singles.
Date My Age made it really easy. I could join and view online profiles for free. All of a sudden, my empty house wasn't so quiet anymore. I got so much attention, it just made me feel seen and alive. Date My Age helped me start a totally new chapter in my life.
Find a friend, a lover, a partner at Date My Age. Get 60% off when you join at datemyage.com today. That's datemyage.com to connect with thousands of singles worldwide. datemyage.com.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
But in the context of drums, you know, a simple, quick way is to do an equal distance triangle where you take the microphone, you place it, let's say 3 feet, and you can do this with an XLR cable. If you don't have a tape measure or you want to do this a little bit easier and actually pinpoint where it goes or you want to reference if everything's okay, get an XLR cable, put one end on the actual snare top, then point it up to the overhead, pinch it at that point, and then swing it over while maintaining the end on the snare at the same point. Swing it over to the next overhead. If it doesn't touch it at the same tension point and everything, it might be too close or it might be too far. But once you know you've got it in that same spot, then you're pretty good on imaging. The overheads will actually capture the snare at the same timing. It will feel like it's in the center. Now, placement of your overheads, that's kind of your choice. Some people like, I think it's called the Glenn Johns trick, where it's like one straight down the middle of the drum set pointing straight down, and one of them to like your far right, but it's equal distant to the snare. And that one is capturing from behind like the floor tom or something. But once again, the big focus on that one is equal timing on the overheads. Now, what some people do and go as far as doing is delaying like the close mic snare to the overheads, and same thing to the kick, to the overheads. Reason being is that you'll start noticing that things start to sound a little bit tighter. Now, unfortunately, when you start listening to things like that, where you start time aligning too much, you start to lose some of that natural room sound where it's like, listen, like if I was 10 feet back and the room mic was time aligned to the overhead, for instance, like it's not going to sound very natural. So you don't have to time align the hell out of it, but at least time aligning your overheads, your snare and things of that nature will help a lot, but just don't go bananas with it. But it will help you minimize the comb filtering, which means that you will actually be maximizing the amount of punch, the transient detail that's there, and the frequency ranges that you don't want to lose, because phase will cancel out certain frequencies if left unchecked. And ultimately, that's what you're going to end up fighting. You could, let's say that you felt like the snare just needed a little more body when you were blending in that top mic and the bottom mic on it. It could just be that it needed a phase flip. You didn't need to reach for the EQ to try to boost it. Now, let's talk about low pass and high pass real quick, because these things can also affect phase, but it can also benefit the rest of your processing, which, you know, for those that are confused, high pass means that you're cutting the lows, allowing for the higher information to pass through. And low pass means you're cutting the higher information to allow the lows to come through. So if there was any confusion on that, that's the easiest way to think about it. But when you're applying a filter, like let's say shaving off the low end, you are actually changing the phase of the actual source audio. And that could put other things out of phase when dealing with multi-mic things. So if you're just working on vocals, it's not going to affect it that bad. But if you're concerned about like rumbling noise, wind noise, handling of the mic, let's say that you just have a 58 at home and everything you're recording for your record is on a 58 and you're holding the mic, a high-pass filter could actually help you out in minimizing some of that handling noise, some of the wind noise, maybe from your breathing or anything like that. I know I breathe loud. Listen, it's my thing. I get it. But I would like to cut that out of the mic if there's some wind noise caused by it. So a low-pass filter will help you out with that. But when you're doing something like that on a snare, sometimes, even though we, let's say, phase flip the bottom mic, we might actually put it right back out of phase by using a low pass filter and not listening carefully to it. So when you're applying them, a lot of times what I like to do is try to filter up to like the root note where you still have a focused sense of body with less noise below it on a high pass filter. But you know you've gone too far when things start to sound thin, or when you start going down low, it just doesn't represent the instrument or the source, like whether it be a vocal. Like male vocals, we typically will high pass, let's say, a lot of people start around 80, but, you know, more recently I've been high passing as high as like 140, you know, and for female vocals, I'll high pass as high as like 180. It's always case by case. There's no one frequency that you always high pass at, but you know you've gone too far when things start sounding very thin. Because, yes, you can add things like saturation or voice of God later and blah, 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 and try to boost it back up. The goal is not necessarily that. The goal is to help refocus the information that you're affecting with high-pass and low-pass filters so that your later processing actually have a more focused range and have less information that might be affecting it. For instance, a compressor. If there's some low-end rumbling and the compressor is being affected by that low-end more than it is being by the vocal, you know, it's not going to work out. And compression is going to bring that information out as well. So it allows you to focus that compression on a range that is actually needed versus what's not actually needed. Okay, so jumping into faders and overall panning. This, once again, is not a replacement for proper gain staging or phase alignment or anything like that. Now, first thing I want to talk about is, what is fader resolution? We hear this all the time, and it gets thrown around, but not everybody fully explains it. And sometimes when it gets explained, you get one version of it, but not the other. So in a digital sense, fader resolution sometimes means that Pro Tools sounds better when you leave the fader at zero. You know, I've heard teachers in college say that. I've heard people out in the world in the actual studios and everything talk about how they just like leaving the fader at zero as much as they can because it sounds better. And it's even put into like some products' marketing plan where their brand will actually tell you, leave the fader at zero and use the output sends to do this and have the automation follow your fader in Pro Tools. And that way you get full resolution out of Pro Tools. Cool. That's digital resolution. That's not actual fader resolution. Fader resolution is more about the granularity behind the range of motion that you have available to you at the point where your finger is. So let's say I put my hand on the fader and it's at zero That's just unity on the board. For me to go to plus 10, it's probably like an inch or two, depending on the fader. There are like 100 millimeter faders. I forget what it is. But whatever. Point is, from 0 to plus 10 and 0 to minus 10 is virtually an equal distance to each other. But minus 30 to minus 40 is actually smaller than minus 30 to minus 20. It's because faders are logarithmic. They're not linear. Logarithmic faders, usually known as like audio taper, just means that it moves in a way that is a little more natural to the human ear, or at least that's kind of how it's described. It makes sense. Listen, at the bottom of the fader, you have minus infinity. Sometimes that's what it puts. So if you're telling me that 75% of that fader is minus infinity to zero, and then the last 25% is zero to 10, you know, that's a pretty wide range of motion below zero. So you, when we talk about fader resolution, we're really just talking about, once again, how much range of motion you have from one decibel to the next on that fader at whatever point you have it at. So maintaining good gain staging allows you to have your faders at zero, or at least at a starting point. You obviously, in a studio sense, once you start mixing, you can throw the faders however you want. Live audio wise, a lot of guys try to keep their faders at zero and try to, use that as their instrument. You know, they're kind of moving with the band using those faders. So as much control as they can have in subtle ways, the better. That's kind of how you look at it in live audio. Now, when it comes to panning, this is actually really important because it actually helps you create separation even before EQ or compression or reverbs or anything of that nature. Filtering can help you create that separation already. So for instance, like filtering out a little bit of low end in the snare might make the kick and bass breathe a little bit better, more naturally in between them. Maybe tapering off a little bit of the low end on the bass makes the kick drum sound a little bit deeper, even though you haven't actually boosted the low end on the kick drum. But once you get to panning, you can send that guitar hard left if you wanted to, and it would actually free up that mid-range down the middle of the mix. You can send the keyboards hard right, even giving more space for the vocals to exist. So when we're talking about like the three main things, I want to say it's like gain staging, filtering along with phase, and then your faders. A lot of engineers describe the faders as kind of like the main instrument point, like the strings on the guitar for themselves. Main reason is that as the band is moving, let's say we get to the chorus and we really want that guitar to really push, we're pushing with the band. If we want the low end to suddenly start hitting a little bit harder, we're going to push that kick and bass a little bit harder. So we're really moving the console like an instrument. You don't want to look at it as, you know, this very clinical thing. It's really not. It's just trying to give yourself as much range of motion on the fader so that you can actually make more critical decisions and actually make the moves that you want to, without having to worry about bumping it one little bit too hard and suddenly you made a drastic change. You know, the lower you are on the fader, the easier it is to make a 10 decibel change versus the higher you are, that same range of motion might have only been a decibel change. You know, it could literally be 10 times more if you're lower on the fader. Okay, so let's recap. We talked about gain staging, its importance, and how it actually affects the quality of your recording by, one, maximizing the available bits you have to you, you know, getting as much dynamic range into your recording without clipping the audio or just, you know, getting too quiet, you know, just wasting some bits. We talked about filters and phase and the importance of that and how it plays a role in your actual, not only just clarity of the audio, right, but how it affects comb filtering, things of that nature, where you could be losing transients just because of phase or comb filtering. And then we talked about, you know, fader resolution and panning and kind of its very basic but important role in keeping you able to make subtle changes as you go, without having to worry about moving one little bit too far too soon. So, yeah, once again, this episode isn't the sexiest. I get it. But if you can follow this one episode and just say, hey, you know what? I'm going to try to record myself at home. I'm just going to follow these few little quick tips. I bet you could get a quality recording. Now, once again, this isn't necessarily saying that you don't need treatment. This isn't saying that a good mic won't make a difference. This is just saying that if you can get this sense of practice down, it doesn't matter what set of tools you have in front of you, you will have a better end result. Because some people will just grab a fader, throw it up, and if they clip, they say, hey, fuck it, we clipped. You know, that was a good take. And sometimes, hey, if that was a good take and it clipped, who cares? But that's not always the best practice. You know, we want to get as good as we can with our audio. And if we don't really know what we're doing mixing-wise just yet, just focusing on these very, very basic topics of, once again, proper gain staging, filters, phase, time aligning your mics. If you have, like I said, a tape measure can help you out with that. And just having good fader practices, you know, feeding your mix bus properly. As long as you can do that, you'd be surprised how far you can go. But with that said, once again, unfortunately, we don't have DK with us. I miss my guy. But my name is Lou, and thanks for listening to the Mixing Music Podcast. If you'd like to support us some more, you can actually sign up for our exclusive content, which are released twice a week with DK and our friend James. And that gets into more of the technical side of the podcast. A lot of what me and DK typically do is more of the general and philosophical kind of side of things, where we kind of just like to dive into, like, I guess what we like to do as our practices. But if you want more, you want more consistency out of, like, what's available to you, then actually go to mixingmusicpodcast.com and you can actually follow the links there to actually get to some of our exclusive content. With that said, happy mixing, my friends, and stay saucy.
I'm not exactly a tech genius, but I knew one thing for sure. If I wanted my small business to crush it, I needed a website that worked like a pro, and I needed it yesterday. Lucky for me, Bluehost made it ridiculously easy. With their AI design tools, building my website was a walk in the park. I could customize, optimize, and monetize everything exactly how I wanted. In just a few minutes, I had a secure site up and running. I couldn't believe how straightforward it was. And getting found online? Bluehost helped me with that, too. I perfected my keywords and meta descriptions with their search engine tools. The AI even gave me suggestions to improve my pages. Now I can sit back, relax, and focus on my customers, while my website continues to rank higher and higher on Google. With their 30-day money-back guarantee, I wasn't worried about taking the plunge. And now I'm so glad I did. Head over to Bluehost.com and build something special today.
Plan on flying? It's time to upgrade to a real ID. Because in order to board domestic flights, your driver's license or state-issued ID must be a real ID, or you'll need another acceptable form of identification. So don't wait. Find out how to get your real ID at tsa.gov/real ID. That's tsa.gov/real ID. Or visit your local DMV. And then you'll be cleared for takeoff.
If you love the Mixing Music Podcast but want deeper, ad-free, technical episodes, we've got you covered. Our Patreon gives you access to over 250 exclusive episodes and new content every single week, all focused on mixing, mastering, and engineering at a high level. For just $4 a month, you get practical tips and techniques that will instantly improve your sound. Join now at mixingmusicpodcast/exclusive.